Thanks for tuning into Journey. Everyone is welcome at the table. We are a community being shaped by Jesus, experiencing and practicing humility, curiosity, belonging, and generosity. We hope to be a people who embrace the way of Jesus by listening first, speaking second, loving freely, and giving generously.
Now we'll transition into where we go from here. How many of you have been here for like the last few weeks and got to experience Genesis? A handful. That's great. We've been in Genesis for actually quite a while. We started last fall and we just finished Genesis 3. And one of the things that we talked about in great detail over the last few weeks is what it was like to get kicked out of the garden. What it was, Adam and Eve were in the beauty of Eden, had this perfect relationship with God, and obviously that didn't work out. And so they got pushed out of the garden, and they got pushed into the world then that gets cursed, into this world in which we now live. And oftentimes we find ourselves thinking, man, this world is really broken. You know what? It's really broken. There's no doubt. All you have to do is pay attention for a little while. All you have to do is, you don't even have to pay attention. It just happens to you naturally. Wars, rumors of wars, all those things. And a couple of weeks ago, Mike had us write down some laments. I don't know how many of you did that, but I'm going to share a few with you this morning. It's heartbreaking. We pray over stuff every week on Tuesdays, and we read over the notes. So if you're wondering if somebody does pray over these, we do. And with that, the laments were heartbreaking. But there was a lot of themes that came about. And so it felt like we needed to talk about something a little more uplifting this week. And we're going to talk about hope this week. As we head into Easter, as we head into this time of year, the idea of hope is often misunderstood. It is not always readily available to us. We find ourselves grasping for words to define it. Is it a feeling? Is it an action? What is hope? And hope seems kind of, it's not very tangible. But you know when somebody has hope. You know when you're hopeful. You know when you're hopeless. You know when what that feels like. And so I want to invite you into this morning an adventure down this path of trying to figure out where our hope comes from, how we can be hopeful in the midst of an election year, how we can be hopeful in the midst of whatever it is that we're going through. And so what I did is what probably most of you would do, is like, wow, I wonder what Reddit has to say about hope. Okay, so I got some Reddit readers. I find Reddit to be very entertaining at times, but also very depressing at times, because the full humanity is on display. If you don't know what Reddit is, it's a website that is basically a forum of opinion. Somebody will throw a question out there like, hey, so how hopeful are you? And then you get this litany of responses. And it's unvarnished, man. It is, so it's not for the faint of heart. So if you decide to go to Reddit, don't blame me. I'm warning you. It is what it is. It's R-rated. So, so the pastor went to Reddit. I didn't think of that before I just said what I said. But anyway, I went to Reddit, searched discussions on hope. And it was crazy. It was enlightening. So if you want to just peruse it sometime, go for it. But it was also extraordinarily sad. It was clear that most of the people that were commenting on this had no idea what hope was. It boils down to, if you read through it, and I got to the end, and the first five things were just brutal. The first five things, like, how can anybody have hope in this world? It was just brutally fearful, is the word I would use. And then people would say, oh, no, you need to have hope. And then people would interact, and they'd respond. But most of the hope was basically wishful thinking. It was, if we just can see a better future, if we could just wish for it. It's like, it's missing the point of hope. Hope is rooted in reality. It is not rooted in wishful thinking. And just, it's like, I hope I have a better day is wishful thinking. So everybody, so we kind of use those words interchangeably. So I want to pull hope out of this idea of a cultural word that basically means wishful thinking. Everybody got that? Okay, so I invite you not to go to Reddit now. So you don't need to, I just told you the whole thing. But, so if you kind of sit in our current cultural malaise and wonder how we're doing and how the world is progressing and how things just are. And the answer to that question, as long as I can remember, is it's broken. Something's not right. Something is going to go wrong. Because when we left the Garden of Eden, we entered into a world that was broken. It was full of struggle. It was, the ground became cursed. We had a new enemy. The death enters the equation. And so the longer I live, the more death I experience. And the longer life goes, the more that you realize that life is a series of losses. And so you find, okay, it's real hopeful, Kev. This is not what we wanted to hear this morning. But as you step into the world and you take a good purview, a good look at what we live in and who the people are and how they respond to the things that are struggles and difficulties and wars and rumors of wars and all the things, it's tough to have hope, true hope. Because the reality is, wishful thinking is better at times. I just wish it was better. Yeah, I wish it was too. But hope is not dependent on it being better. You've got to just soak that in for a second. Hope is not predicated on our lives being better. Okay. Hope is always connected to something else. What I mean by that is, it's what you have faith in. Ultimately, what you have faith in will determine your hope. I was going to give you an example in politics, but decided that would be more disappointing and more hopeless. So we're going to go down my favorite path, not driving. Somebody asked me in the first, it's not driving. There's no hope driving here. So I'm going to go with sports. Sorry, anybody in the room that's like, oh, kidding me? It's just really quick. Let's talk sports. Hope is an integral part of being a fan of any team, right? Anybody a fan of the new soccer team in town? Nobody. Cool. Who cares? Nailed it. But anyway, hope is an integral part of being. But we have the Preds. I know that there's Preds fans here. I know that there's Titans fans here. And then we have a university in town called Vanderbilt. And they have sports teams. Did you know they have sports teams? Being a fan of a Vanderbilt sports team, that's wishful thinking. I'm sorry. Is there a Vanderbilt grad in the room that wants to throw? Sorry. Okay. That was uncalled for. I get it. But hope is rooted in something. So you have faith in something. You learn something. Hope is rooted in facts. And so as you go about like rooting for a team, you find out who the players are and you find out who the coach is and who the ownership is, and you start to go, okay, I have hope in this because these people can actually lead it. It can actually get something done. The team has some players, etc. Vanderbilt should not be in the SEC, but that's a different story for another day. But all that to say is that bad leadership leads to less hope, right? It should, but we can always have bad leadership and go, I can have wishful thoughts. I live in a place of wishful thoughts, usually with my sports teams. I'm from Minnesota, we don't win anything, and I'm a huge Vikings fan, and every year it's, you know, the season starts and it's wishful thinking. But I have hope But that hope is really rooted in, at some point, they've got to win something. That's the facts. Maybe not in my lifetime. I literally have a shirt now that says, before I die, I would love for them to win a championship. But hope lives in this place between what our expectations are of what is to come and the possibilities of what is to come, and the reality that actually happens is really where we find hope. Because reality is either going to be a hope crusher or it's going to be a hope enforcer or encourager. Hope needs to be rooted in something deeper than wishful thinking. And so hope springs from faith, and faith is something we act on. Faith isn't just something, again, that we conjure up or whatever. It's something that we actually do. Hope is something that is a product of that. And so you see hope and action and faith are all intertwined. It's the fan of a football team or a baseball team or any team in sports that says, I'm a fan, but doesn't really have any sense of faith in it or any sense of hope in it. They're not really going to take any action. They're not going to go watch a game. They're not going to pay attention. When I lose hope, I stop paying attention. I just stop. That's what happens. Hopelessness is rooted in the reality of this is not going to happen. So hope, as it springs from faith, will move us to a place of where we actually do something. Inactivity is a direct correlation to a lack of hope. Here's the other part of this that's really hard, and I got a couple texts from it on the text line. By the way, I'm not going to do Q&R today. I'll just throw that in right now. If you do have questions, though, text them to me. I will answer them this week. I'm trying to get us to be more connected with this thoughts as we go to communion, so I'm not going to interrupt it with the Q&R. So, but there's the text line. It's in little print up there underneath. But so if you do have questions. But here's the question that I get that is the struggle with hope. Hope in and of itself does not always get the outcome it desires. Hope in and of itself does not get the outcome it desires all the time. It does sometimes. But hope and the level of hope isn't necessarily predicated upon our current circumstance. And what I mean by that is if you are in a difficult, hard situation, hope might be hard to find, but hope is still necessary to persevere through it. Because there needs to be some level of expectation on the other side. And so hope in those things, even in the war in Gaza over in Israel, where is the hope for the people that are in Gaza, right? And so you ask the question, you struggle with the question, but the answer to the question isn't how the outcome actually comes about. It is where you find the hope in the midst of the difficulty. Tracking? Not easy. And then I also want to just draw into this conversation is this idea that God understands because God experienced all that we experience. So Jesus lived a life of obscurity in Nazareth, God in flesh. He lived in a place that no one knew who he was. He was a carpenter's boy. And he grows up and he ends up going through a series of hardships and difficulties and struggles and temptations and ultimately dies on a cross. And so all this by the time he was 33 years old. And so that he might identify with us as we wander in the world of death. But he beats death. And so our hope is rooted in this faith. Our hope is rooted in what ultimately we all face from a God who gets it and is with us in it. I think oftentimes we see hope as being I expect God to do this, get me out of my struggle, get me out of my pain, get me out of this world that's a mess. And we miss the point of him being with us in it. Wishful thinking is, get me out of here. Hope is, help me through it. Two different things. Wishful thinking will always disappoint. Hope will always persevere. Okay. So this, that in mind, some of the things that we sit in as a community, and I think it's really important for us to know what is generally around us as a community of believers, of followers, and some of the major themes that we were lamenting gives us some context, I think, for understanding hope in a better way. So, Lucius, if you wouldn't mind, just, yeah. So these were from a couple weeks ago. We had you write down laments, and these are themes that came out as we read them, and there was a lot of them. I lament my marriage, job, desires, possessions, my life. I lament mental illness and sexual assault. I lament the death of children through war, abuse, miscarriage, stillbirth, etc. I lament my weakness to the sin of my life, infidelity, dishonesty, unrighteousness, anger, and lack of forgiveness to self. I lament the choices and shortcomings that has caused disconnection in my marriage. I lament the pain of past relationships and its effect on future relationships. I lament the addiction that has taken control of someone I love. I lament the cancer that is attacking and stealing the life from another far too young. The cancer theme came up a lot. Addiction came up a lot. Relational strife came up a lot. So we come, we gather, and we sit, and we assume we're all the same. We all assume we're fighting the same demons. We assume we're all lamenting the same things. But it's a deep well of life in the land outside of Eden, of hurt. It just is. It's the human condition. As I get older, you watch and you pay attention, it's common to all of us. Some form of difficulty. So with that in mind, I chose a parable today from Luke 18, 1 through 8, because I really wanted to just speak into this idea of hope. And the one that I landed on, I've not taught this before, because I didn't know quite what to do with it. But in Luke chapter 18, it is the story of the powerless against the powerful. And it gives us lessons in hope and perseverance. And I'll invite you into this story. So it's the parable of the persistent widow. If you would, I want to read it over you. It's going to come up on the screens. If you could just position yourself in such a way that you put yourself in the seat of an observer of a court, that would be helpful. Watching what takes place, and then we'll dive into this. This is Jesus speaking. Now he was telling them a parable to show that at all times they ought to pray and not become discouraged, saying, in a certain city there was a judge who did not fear God and did not respect any person. Now there was a widow in that city, and she kept coming to him saying, give me justice against my opponent. For a while he was unwilling. But later he said to himself, even though I do not fear God nor respect any person, yet because the widow is bothering me, I will give her justice. Otherwise, by continually coming, she will wear me out. And the Lord said, listen to what the unrighteous judge said. Now, will God not bring about justice for his elect who cry out to him day and night? And will he delay long for them? I tell you that he will bring about justice for them quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? I love a good parable that tells you the reason it is written. He was telling them a parable to show that at all times they ought to pray and not be discouraged. And so you look at the characters in the story. The judge character is the character that represents God in the story. And this always troubled me. I couldn't reconcile these two things because God is not corrupt. And so as I read this and I would think about it, I would go, I don't know what to do with it. I don't know how to teach this. But he was comparing extremes, if you're with me for a moment. The extremes are, if this corrupt judge, this judge who did not fear God, had no accountability, this and didn't respect people, any person, could ultimately come to a place of giving justice, won't a just God who is none of those things give justice? So the picture here is of a very, very corrupt judge. Now, again, he's the most powerful. He's the one with no authority. He's the one that's is supposed to dispense justice. He's the one that's supposed to even the playing field. He's the one that's supposed to do the right thing. And he's the seat of power. And then we get introduced to a widow. A widow in this culture would have been the lowest of cultural disposition that you could find. No power, no means by which to get power. The only person probably in a community like this that would be lower than a widow would be an orphan. Someone with no adult to advocate for them. And so the widow is ultimately the powerless against the powerful. And this theme is throughout the Bible. This theme is over and over again. It is the how the powerless ultimately does win out over the powerful. And how Jesus, in his ministry and ultimately his dying, demonstrates this idea that the giving of life, the giving up of oneself, is actually more powerful than power over. Changes the world. And so we see the theme of the gospel in this story. We see the theme of, oh, okay, I see that where the weak overcomes the strong. I see where the weak is given justice. I see the story playing out in such a way that I go, oh, I understand. And then for the judge, he comes back and he goes, I love this idea that, you know, oftentimes people who are like the judge in the story are very, very unaware of their own personhood. This guy was aware because he says to himself, I love this, he says to himself, even though I don't fear God and I don't respect any person, he says this to himself. So he's reached a level of arrogance. He's reached a level of arrogance where he's self-aware of the fact that he reports to no one, and he is in to the point where he's not fearful of God himself, and he has no respect for any person. He's aware. What kind of person is that? You know anybody like that? You do. You probably do. Arrogance drips off of them. They're always right. They're always, and to the point where they don't care what you say to them, what you think. They're unteachable. They're stubborn. They're all the things that you can imagine. That's this guy. And he encounters somebody that's incorrigible. He encounters somebody who's like, I have no power, but the one thing I can do, I'm going to do. The one thing I can do, I'm just going to keep doing it over and over and over and over and over. Now, just join me for a second as the clerk of the court. Okay, you're the guy, person, standing there conducting the order of the day. And you see this widow coming first time. Oh, this isn't going to go well. So she comes in, makes her case before the judge. The judge blows her off. And he goes, well, too bad. Justice not served. She goes away. Next day, she shows up again. And he's like, what are you doing here again? And the same thing happens. So what are you thinking as the clerk? Is the judge going to eventually throw her in jail? What is he going to do with this woman? Because she keeps showing up. over and over again. Eventually, you take matters into your own hands as she's walking up. Hey, you know this isn't going to go well. You're just making him mad. Why don't you just stop? And so you become part of the, or do you be, are you the guy going, yeah, let's see how this goes. Just keep coming. Let's see where this goes. But ultimately, what is playing out is the pattern of the judge is being continually challenged by the powerless. It's so frustrating when powerful people can't get powerless people to do what they want. It's equally frustrating when a powerless person can't get somebody who's powerful to do what they ought to do. So you see the conflict. You see the problem. You see the issue at hand. A widow of all people becomes the teacher to the judge. Becomes the one to move him. The one who has no leverage. The one that has no position. The one that has no money. The one that has nothing moves the powerful one. So here's the other thing about the story. It kind of leaves you with, okay, so we don't know what the issue was. We don't know what, it doesn't matter what the issue was. It doesn't matter who her opponent was. It doesn't matter any of those things. This is a story of power against powerlessness. And what you find, and what probably is true, the judge says, fine, I'm going to give you justice. But the judge doesn't change. He still is the guy that doesn't fear God and doesn't respect people. And the widow's station in life doesn't change. So what's changed? Justice. What's changed is something right happened. The widow is still a widow, and the judge is still corrupt. But we see a little bit of heaven. We see a little bit of justice. And you see a little bit of hope. It's the struggle of looking at the world through the lens of what is everything is wrong. Versus looking through the lens of where is God in all of this? So where does her persistence come from? She can't control her enemy. She can't control her opponent, obviously, otherwise she wouldn't have been in court. She cannot control her station in life. She cannot control what the judge does and doesn't do. She cannot control what happens in the court. It's one thing she can control. One thing. What she chooses to do with the situation. This is true of every human. Every human. In every circumstance, no matter where we are, our station in life, doesn't matter. Our position, who our enemy is, what we're trying to accomplish, who we can control, and the circumstances we control are very, very limited to us. And her hope is found in her persistence. I will just keep going because that's all I got. Now, some of us have more than that. Some of us have more than that being just all we can do. But eventually, wearing down a corrupt judge. The beauty of this parable is that it gives us the reasons that we should be persistent. I think she would have been persistent even if he didn't wear down. Because it was what she could do. And this is where her faith produced action, which ultimately produced hope. What you do reveals if you have hope. Back to the sports analogy for just a second. If my team is doing well, I'll watch because I have hope. If my team hasn't won a game all year and it's the last game of the year, I'm out. Because I don't have hope anymore. It's done. If there's a glimmer of hope, if my team is like 500, won a few, lost a few, and there's still hope, a glimmer of hope that they can move on, I'll watch. It produces behaviors in us. Hope does something to us. It moves us to action. It moves us to do what we can do. You know, hopelessness has settled in when you become passive to things that matter. So I want to just share with you a few things that help infuse hope into us. And some of these, you're going to go, that's really hard. And some of you are going to go, I get it. And some of them you're going to go, no, thank you. And that's fine. You do with them as you will. But one of the things that I found that builds hope in people is the fact that when they're going through difficult times, hope is the means by which they persevere, and it is the means by which they begin to learn patience. Patience is a learned behavior for us humans. And so, you know, oftentimes the answer to the question of why am I going through this difficult period, or why is this happening to me, why did this happen, is not so much how do I get through to the other end of this. It is, what am I to learn in the middle of it? And a lot of times the answer to that question for me has, oh, this is going to play out over time, and I have to learn how to be in the midst of a difficult circumstance and not be miserable. And the answer to being not miserable is hope. The expectation of something good in the future. And as believers in Jesus, we have that. As believers in Jesus, I know this sounds kind of, oh, he's gonna give the Jesus answer. Well, the Jesus answer is this, is that the Jesus answer is he's beat death. He rose from the dead. And with that, our faith says that we have the gift in our faith that death does not hold us. And so that takes us to the next place of longer view of things. You have to take a longer view of things. If you take things in the immediate and take history lessons, we often forget history. God has been very active in your life up until this point, but oftentimes it's at this point that we want him to be active, and he's not delivering me. He's not changing my circumstance. He's not taking me from being a widow to a not widow. He's not taking me from to a different station. I'm not getting what I want. My hope is dwindling. My fear is God has abandoned me. He hasn't abandoned you. He's in there with you. If you look to your past, you will see where he's been with you. And that helps you with your present and gives you hope for the future. But if you merely forget everything he's done for you up until this point in your life, and your faith is only predicated on the moment of today, you will lose hope. Because it's very short-sighted. Hope is long-sighted. Understand the value of pain and struggle as a teacher and a faith developer. You know, it'd be easy for us. That's the wrong word. There's nothing easy about it. Part of the beauty of the Gospels, as you read Jesus' story, is to see that he wept. You see that he was betrayed by his friends. You see the pain of relationship. You see the struggle of life. God in flesh joined us in this world of death and experienced what we experience. And I think in some ways very much so a teacher for him of what it's like to be human. And in Hebrews, it tells us so that he is able to identify with all of our struggles. Not so he can take them away in this life, but so that he can be there with us and give us strength and hope, having experienced what we've experienced. It is short-sighted for us to think that all he's up there for is to deliver us from our momentary pain and our difficulty and our struggle. So that means that has a different purpose. So the different purpose has to come to light. And when it comes to light, I begin to recognize, I hope you do too, is that it's a teacher. It teaches me about my faith. It teaches me about what it is to identify with others. It teaches me, I learn more in pain than I do in joy. The other thing about hope, and what steals hope, is bad news intake. I have to limit the amount of bad news I'd intake. I think it's way too accessible right now, and it's really difficult. So I just encourage you, limit it, control that. Live thankful lives. Be thankful for small things, helps hope in the midst of difficulty. And then ultimately understand who and what you can control, and that's pretty much yourself and what you do. And so hope killers reside in a couple of places. Comparison will kill your hope. And what I mean by that is there's always going to be somebody who has more than you and somebody that has less than you. Somebody who's better looking than you and somebody that's not. Somebody that dresses better and somebody that doesn't. Somebody who drives a better car and drives a worse car. And comparison is the goal of, I've got to be better than somebody else and I can be better than I am. And all it does is invoke the idea of wishful thinking. And I think one of the great crimes of social media is comparison. I think that. You may not think that. And so I want to invite you into a non-comparison way of life. And then I want you to ask yourself a question. Who is the primary voice you listen to in your life? Everybody has a primary voice. And that voice could be pessimistic, it could be optimistic, it could be loud, it could be quiet, it could be any number of things. But you want hope-filled voices in your life. If all you got is cynics, it's gonna be a struggle. It's gonna be a struggle. I'm just being real practical at the moment. I invite you into a hope-filled life. I'm telling you, if you surround yourself with cynics, you're not gonna make it. Don't let momentary defeat steal your hope. Everybody has momentarily have defeats, maybe even daily. And the Bible is littered with these. As you read the Old Testament, as you read the New Testament, people screw up all over the place. It's part of the deal. It's part of being human. Don't let momentary defeat steal your hope. And then ultimately, don't try to control what you cannot control, meaning other people, circumstances, and God. We don't get to control God. The moment we step into that thing where we go, okay, I'll have hope if God delivers, we put conditions on God, and we ultimately are saying to God, I really want to be God. And if you would just listen to me and play this out like it's supposed to go, that the list is, these lists are great. Like, I want you to heal my spouse. Man, that's a great prayer. And if you don't, I'm out. So we basically put conditions on God as if we are God. So we tell God, this is how life should play out. And if it doesn't, then I'm not going to have anything to do with you. Think about it for a minute. I've made prayers where I go, come on, what's the deal? I've been persistent. I've been ongoing. The result is not my desire. So then I'm left with, what do I do with that? What do I do with, and I'm going to give you one specific example of where I lost hope. And it's a story that I don't like to tell. I've told it a few times, but when I was 19, my brother died, and he was in the hospital for 3 days. He had fallen on his head. He was 21, and I prayed for 3 days. Lord, please, just heal him. I know you can. I have faith. I'm praying. Nope. He died 3 days later. I was left in a place of asking the question. 21-year-old people die. I prayed. I had faith. I did what I was supposed to do. I was persistent. I was all the things that I was supposed to be. And it wasn't like I doubted whether he could do it or not, but yet he died. So what are you left with at that point? Pain, struggle, questioning God's goodness, questioning whether he really loved me, questioning all kinds of things. And so you sit in that for a little bit and you begin to realize there's a long play here. Hope is found in a different place. It's not found in him doing what I want. It is found in him being present when things are hard, not right, and difficult. And so I had to find God's voice in my despair. And sometimes that's with people who believe in ways like me. I had to be in a community of people who were willing to speak into it in a way that brought me hope. Not Christianese, not like, oh, you know, it's going to be okay. It wasn't that. It was just people sitting with me and saying, I'm with you. What do you need? Nothing. Okay, so we'll just sit here and do nothing. And sometimes that's what we need, is presence. Sometimes we need encouraging words. Sometimes we need a hand on the shoulder. Sometimes, and this is where the community actually does the work of hope. If you can't have hope right now, can I have hope for you? Can I sit with you and hold hope alongside you? Can I be with you in your despair? You walk with somebody who has died. You walk with people who have been through divorce. You walk with people who have been diagnosed with sickness that they cannot cure. You walk with people, and eventually they look at you and go, I can't today. I'll do it for you. That's why we're together. If you're required to hold hope by yourself forever, you can't do it. But if you're around people who hold hope because they're rooted in the same idea of who Jesus is, and we can do it together, and I can hold it when you can't, it gives you hope. So something good is coming. Something great is coming. And if you look around the world, you see glimmers and pieces of heaven. Even in the midst of war, you can see it. Even in the midst of the worst of days. Over the last few months, I know I'm over. I know, I see the look on your face. For the beginning of the year, it's been a rough month and a half. That's why you haven't seen me in a while. But my mom was in the hospital most of January. And I would go visit her. And in one of the hospitals locally, it was just really hard. The people there didn't, the workers didn't want to be there. It was just really dark. You ever been in a place like that? It felt hopeless. But every once in a while, a person would come on the scene and light would come into the darkness. That person who would smile and talk to you like you're human. The person that would take care of my mom in a particular way that gave her dignity. The one that, you know, would explain things that I didn't understand. And I would walk away in the midst of a very dark moment and go, thank you, I needed to see some light today. And I could see heaven in a dark place. because the light in that was so bright, stunning. The outcome wasn't what I had hoped for, but I saw heaven along the way. It gives me hope for me bringing heaven into people's dark places where hope is lost. So this morning, we're going to do communion a little different because I want to do it all together. Hope is the essence of communion. And what I mean by that is our faith says that when we take communion together, when we take that bread and we take that cup and we eat and drink together, we're saying we have faith. We have faith in something that is so surreal, that Jesus died on a cross and he rose from the dead. He defeated our ultimate enemy. And ultimately, the life we live now is rooted in this hope. This eternal hope, this underlying hope of that the long term is this plays out in such an incredible way. And along the way, we get to share that. We get to live that. We get to share it with people and encourage each other. So today, I'm going to ask you to do two things as this song, next song comes up. One is just go get communion. Don't take it. I'd like us to take it as a community. So I'll come back up and lead you through that. So just go up. There'll be people around the room. You can get it. Bring it back to your seat and hold it. And I'll come back up. The other thing is, I would love to know what gives you hope. And so if you could, there's pieces of paper at each of the stations and pens. And if you would, for me, I really could use the encouragement of hearing what gives you hope. And if you would write that down, it can be one word, it could be a number of things, but that would be helpful. So let's do this together. So again, just take the communion back to your seat. Love to hear what hope is for you.